Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Feline friends, welcome to Catitude. I'm your show host, Michelle Fern. Today, we have an author who has written the most amazing book. You're going to want to stick around for this, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to welcome Rebecca Van Laer. She is the author of Cat. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me today.
I'm very excited to have you. And I have to say, in reading your book, it kind of is what I think a lot of people, especially women, would like to say to the world as, you know, women that have cats, because there's so many taglines and this that are negative out there, especially for women cat parents.
Yes. Yeah. I definitely wanted to think about the idea of the crazy cat lady and the kind of pervasive attitude that the worst thing that could happen to you is that you end up alone with cats and take that head on, since having cats has been one of the greatest sources of joy in my life. And there's nothing sad about that.
I agree. And I don't know why it became so negative. I don't even know why it became so negative if women decide they don't want to have kids. If guys don't have kids, that's okay.
Yeah. So that's also a big focus of the book. It's a 2-year story. I always knew I was writing a book about my cats, but I actually didn't know that it was also a book about my decision not to have kids for like the first year I was writing it. And it turned out to be both, to be about the pleasure and the value of connection with beings who we don't make, and there being just as much in that as a life choice.
Thank you for writing that. And I know what I said before. I mean, of course, biologically, men cannot have kids, but there are all kinds of households today. And there's, I know, plenty of male couples that I know, some that have kids and some that don't have kids. And there's no stigma attached. If you're a woman and you decide you don't want bio kids, then there's a stigma attached. So that, in my mind, is screwed up. So again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So you have a PhD in literature.
Yes.
So I should call you really Dr. Rebecca Van Laer.
I almost never use that, although I do put it on my tickets when I book a plane. So then the flight attendant knows that I'm a doctor. You know, can't help anyone in a crisis, but yes, do you have a PhD? Yeah, so this book is through Bloomsbury's Object Lesson Series, and a lot of the people who write for it are writing much more academic books. And just picking up a book that's called Cat, people might not know what they're getting into. So I did want to provide facts and research. And yeah, definitely having that background made that part of it easier. And then there's also a chapter toward the end of the book where I'm talking a little bit about other writers who've written memoirs on cats and trying to do a little bit of an analysis of why I think some of those books end up having violence in them, which is often a surprise to cat people, including about my book. So the analytical component there, I think that comes from my graduate training, but also sorry to all of the people who didn't want to read that.
You know what? I could kind of tell as it got there. I don't have a PhD. I have an MBA. I don't feel like I use that all the time, but I should start putting that on.
Yeah.
When I fly, why not?
It takes work. So it like acknowledge it in the situations when it can be. That might just be flights or at the dentist.
Yes. And we worked hard for those freaking degrees.
Absolutely.
Really hard. I don't know. Supposedly it made me more analytical. So I don't know. I think it made me more risk adverse of anything because a lot more stats classes, which are not my best thing. It's like, to quote an old stats teacher, it's like the haircut. Anyway, let's get back to your book. When you added Toby and Gus to your life, did you ever think you would write a book where they would be the stars?
No, it was not on my radar at all. And at that point in my life, I was in graduate school and I was working mostly on critical research, but I was also writing fiction. I had no idea that I would ever write a memoir, much less that it would be so focused on those two precious little furballs.
You know what? I have to say, on Catitude, especially the last few months, I've had a lot of books come through. And I just noticed I'm at my 250th show, because there was about 17 or so from the first host. So I've had a lot of books. And I really like your writing style. I'm not going to critique any of the ones before. But what I liked was there was a lot of story to it, but also a lot of real life with still making it very story. The voice of the book was fantastic.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that matters so much to me. And then also just having the cats fully come across as characters matters so much to me. Like all of us who are cat people, this is like one of the most important beings in your life, your cat. But then at the same time, when you try to describe them to someone else, the first thing you just want to say is, well, they're perfect. So then making them a fully fledged character in a book was something that, I got to take on.
Yeah. And at one point you said you wanted to be a cat.
Yes. Yeah. So I think, can you relate to that? Every day I just look at how relaxed Gus is, just taking his little nap or stretched out. I'm just like, I kind of wish I were you.
Yeah, for the relaxing part, for the no stress part, because they never look like they're stressed. I grew up with dogs first. So, and I've had dogs and cats. And now I just have cats because both dogs are in doggy heaven or wherever they go, or special dog creatures. So I wouldn't say I want to be a dog. They seem to work hard.
Yes, they have a lot of expectations on them. They're supposed to behave a really particular way, whereas cats have, I think, more flexibility.
And they get away with everything, too.
They do.
So tell us about the personalities of Gus and Toby.
So Gus is a friend was doing commissioned paintings of both of them. And he asked me, is Gus a cozy boy or a maniac? And I thought that was so funny because Gus is complete cozy boy. He lives to nap. He's an absolute artist when it comes to napping. He's always finding both a new place and a new position. He's a very fluffy white cat with one blue eye and one green eye. So he's got this air of kind of magic and whimsy about him. And he's also a very gentle creature and soul. Now he's on thyroid medication. And he's the sort of cat where, like, you can easily just put a cream in his ear and he's absolutely not going to fight you, much less like bite or scratch or anything like that. He's just kind of like, okay, Rebecca. And that's actually the voice that I do for him that he talks to me in. So soft is Gus's thing. And Toby, on the other hand, Toby is more of a tough guy. Toby is originally from Alabama, but I met him in Providence when I met my partner, Steven. And, you know, he would start a fight with any creature that crossed his path when he was an indoor-outdoor cat. Possum, cat, whatever. He wanted to be dog cat. And even when he came inside and started living with Gus, when Steven and I moved in together, he was really nice to Gus. They got along beautifully, but he was still like, you know, top cat, tough guy. Even when he walks, you can tell that he's strutting. And maniac as well.
So they're kind of opposites.
Yes, absolutely. Which is nice.
Because, you know, I have a cat crew of three. One is, she was feral till she was four. And Charlotte, I think, is just misunderstood is how we've... Aww. I call her. She's afraid. She looks like an aardvark, you know. She hisses at me. My partner, she loves him. But me, no. Even if I give her shrimp or something, no. I'm evil. And so sometimes I think, I know sometimes I could be like that, but not always. Most of the time, I'm pretty cool, you know. So, you know, we all have our inner biatch kind of comes out for me. And then my diva cat is Molly, who my significant other is in love with. So that's the other woman. And then we have Dennis, who's Chillboy.
The cozy boy of the household.
Yeah. And he was my first cat, which the universe picked the right cat because he's part Maine Coon. So he's basically the dog of cats. He's not that big. He used to be bigger. I think he's shrinking a little as he gets, which happens. He definitely has 9 lives and he's just chill. He could, anything. And he's a very chill boy. But it's interesting how you could just tell their personalities. And cats' personalities, I don't think are as obvious as dogs, but they definitely have different personalities.
Yeah, when you spend time with them.
Have you heard that before?
I don't know if I've heard it put that way before, but I do think that because dogs are in public, like people just get to know their friends' dogs in this way where they're, on the walk, they're at the park, they're coming to the picnic. Whereas cats take more time to open up with people. So outside of the people who they live with, other people are, can be slower to get to know who they are. And then also they, I guess, like from an evolutionary biology perspective, do have less expressive faces than dogs. So there's maybe an air of mystery just in the way that they look. So it takes definitely, I think, more. You have to be close enough to the cat and you have to pay enough attention to the cat to get to know their personality. But when you do those two things, then you know.
Yeah, when you know, you know. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Rebecca Van Laer. She has written the book Cat. So, Rebecca, in the book, your partner says it's okay to, quote, divest from the fantasy, end quote, of having children. So what does this mean in the context of the book, even though we talked about that a little bit in the beginning of our show?
Yeah. So I think that, before it has happened, while it's Schrodinger's baby rather than Schrodinger's cat, you have no idea what it's going to be like. But in our culture, there is a fantasy that there's kind of like nothing better than having a child, that that's how you establish a legacy in this world, that that's how you experience unconditional love, that that's how you kind of like become a full adult. And of course, all of that is really a cultural fantasy. And I think everyone I know who's a parent would say that when it comes down to it, it can be some of those things, but it's also incredibly challenging. It can be incredibly difficult, and it doesn't always work out the way that you want it to, whether it's that you never have that child or whether your relationship with that child just isn't what you fantasized it would be beforehand. So it stands for all of these kinds of change and peak experiences. But at the same time, for me personally, it was weighing that against the other like important goals that I've established for myself, which don't necessarily involve like 18 years of childcare or sleepless nights or any of that, that involve my intellectual life, my writing, what I might broadly call just like my relationship to the environment, my cats included. And divesting from the fantasy meant taking that cultural expectation and the idea of what it might be and putting all of that aside and thinking about the things that I actually want and whether parenthood is compatible with those. And my answer was no. I think that for a lot of people, it's still yes. but that fantasy just plays such a big, big role that it can be hard to even see it clearly, I think.
I think you're right on with that, because there's, even listening to you, I'm not 20 something, but I'm not ancient either. So to give you an idea of where I'm coming from, my listeners have seen my picture, so they know I'm not 20 something, but I will never be old in my head. So having said that, hearing you, and I'm thinking, you know, people always say, even if you're not married these days, oh, but you know, you're not having kids, why aren't you having kids? And it's not selfish to decide, no, I want my life to look like this. This is what it's going to be. And it's my choice. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's really unselfish in a way, because you free yourself up to be a fun aunt to all of the other kids in your life, to participate in community care, to give yourself to people in different ways. So not to say that it is selfish to have kids at all by any means, but I don't think there's anything selfish about choosing not to. It's just a different use of time, because again, it's like how is it selfish if there's nothing that you're depriving anyone else of, only yourself?
Right. And I don't think it's bad for you. I'm talking more society stigma.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so much harder for women, even though, like, that's why I said my age. I'm not, you know, Gen Z, but
me
I'm
either.
Not silent era either. So you guys, I'm somewhere in between. And even with that mindset, well, these days, and we're recording this in almost fall of 2025, these days, without getting too much into politics, things have gone a little backwards, I think, my personal opinion, with as far as women's rights. But that's all I'll go for with that, because this is not a political show. It's about cats. And so I do think, though, that women and men should be able to make those choices and not feel pressures from society. If you don't want kids, don't want kids. You want to have cats instead, go for it. Be the best cat parent you can, because I'd say be the best, you know, two-legged parent you could be too. So, yeah. And be happy with yourself with your choice.
There's a lot of cats that need parents, for anyone listening who needs one or two more cats.
Yes, so many, so many. Okay, so here's another question from your book. So another line in the book says, if dogs are our servants, cats are our shadows. What do you mean by this?
So that's a part of the book where I'm thinking a little bit more about, well, I'm not thinking more, but I'm confronting the literature calls cats an invasive species and a driver of basically environmental destruction. So, you know, dogs, they live a very controlled life, I would say, you know, especially here in the United States. Like, their movements are very much controlled by the people who they live with, their routines, everything about their lives. Cats as a species have a lot more freedom, and they have historically, because they haven't been in service to us. They don't work for us. Some people say that they actually domesticated themselves, that they just came closer to us because they could basically get food from us in human communities. And we just thought they were cute, so we let them stay, even though we can't make them work. So in that case, they've followed us around kind of their own volition. But thinking specifically about the environment, there's obviously a lot that humans do to, you know, raise ecosystems and areas that were once wild. And cats, especially outdoor cats, feral cat colonies, historically and now, have a lot of freedom to take advantage of that and kind of hunt the areas that where maybe we've already taken out the apex predators, or we've created an environment where there's just maybe it's even a nature preserve. Like, cats get into those. So I think that they do what we do in a way that we sometimes don't like to confront, because we don't like to confront what we do either. And maybe that's a little bit why people have historically been afraid of cats sometimes.
Maybe, because you definitely have more, and I've done shows on this, there's definitely more negative connotations about cats. And I've always around Halloween's coming up. So always around Halloween, talk about the stigma with the black cats, which is such baloney. So, but yeah, there's always that there's something evil or mystical, or probably because we just don't understand them as well, because they're stoic creatures. But that's the fun of cats.
Yeah. And I think that their mystery is something fun, but also if you're willing to look at them as a mirror and think, oh, okay, they do this thing. In what ways do we do it too? Like to identify with them more can be interesting.
Yes, it can. Okay, let's talk about, at one point you brought a new cat home named Milton. And I'm not going to go into detail, but that is a dear relative of mine that's no longer with us. So it's kind of funny to have see the name. So what I wanted to call attention to is the fact that you challenged the vet about FIV, feline feline immunodeficiency virus. And you were correct. And you switched vets. So I applaud that, actually, because I think that some cat pet parents, you know, are not comfortable confronting their veterinarian and medical doctors. But, you know, we're talking about veterinarians for this show. So what would you say to them? I've done this. And when I read this part, I was like, yes, yes, go ahead. Yes, you're right. You know, and mine was over here on the clothing a little bit. But what would you say to the people that are just kind of have a little fear of, you know, confronting the vet and saying, no, I don't want to do this, or this is not right, or you said something and I have, you know, different information to show you that what I'm telling you is correct.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that for most of us, if we heard something from a medical doctor, either about ourselves or a close family member that didn't sit right or seemed wrong, we might go out and get a second opinion. And with veterinarians, I think that it's just as valid. Like, yes, they're experts in their field, but at the same time, they might not be really keeping up to date with like really recent research. Their training might be a little bit outdated. And they also might just not know your creature as well as you do. So if you're in a situation where something is just like rubbing you the wrong way, then I don't think that you have anything to lose by questioning it and also doing your own research. That means research like looking in a cat community Facebook group where there might be experts or even people who've had cats with similar issues. It might be like me actually like going and reading peer-reviewed research because I can't help myself. But, you know, if you bring that information to your vet and they can't tell you why you're wrong, if they're just kind of like, I don't know, or that's how it is, like that wouldn't be a good enough explanation for any other family member. If you question something, they should have a really solid explanation for you. And if they don't, you know, get a second opinion, or if you need to, a new veterinarian.
Yes, I like what you said. And I would say, though, you said some good points about reaching out to a cat community. There's a lot of social media these days. Don't necessarily rely on, as they say, Dr. Google or Dr. AI, because that information is not always correct. It's a sweep, and some of it can be very outdated because some things are listed without dates. So don't look at that as the end all. There's also a lot of people that are in social media that are technicians that do a wonderful job of communicating different things to the public. So there's a lot of good information there, but yeah, do your homework. Don't do the AI, Dr. Google business and think that's enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Now that our kitties are getting a little bit older, there's a little kidney stuff. And I don't know if you've ever talked about Tanya's Guide to CKD, but it's like a website that looks like it was made in the 1990s. And there's also, you know, a Facebook group of kidney cats, but it's more up to date than what you would get by looking at ChatGPT. It's a labor of love by real people who really research this and know what they're doing. And so that's the kind of information that you're looking for, like real information from other real cat people with names like Tanya.
No, but I will check into that. I hadn't heard that before.
If you end up having kidney stuff, the go-to resource.
Thank you for that. So if Toby or Gus could have given you one piece of advice, what do you think it would have been?
Oh, I think if they would, with their very different personalities, it would be very different advice.
Okay, so what would Toby say?
I think Toby would say, try harder. Like, you know, and he always did.
No, nope, I'm wrong. He was your feisty cat.
Oh, yeah,
right?
He's the feisty one. Yes, Toby.
He's the feisty one. Okay.
Toby would say, try harder. Keep going. Yeah. And Gus would say, it's going to be okay.
Okay, thanks. So lastly, I'd like to ask, What do you hope readers take away from reading your book?
I think that I want readers to read my book and embrace just like the full range of emotional experience that you can have with a cat. Like, they're not just there to be cute for us. I think that almost anything you can experience in a friendship, you can experience with one, with a cat. And I hope that people open themselves up to that by reading the book or revisit the relationships they've had with their cats, and also just take that out with them with cats, but also with other creatures.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, so much. What kitties do you have now in your house?
Gus and Milton.
That's what I thought. Gus and Milton. We didn't talk about Milton a lot, but what's his personality?
Milton is an absolute clown. I've never known another cat who is just so profoundly silly. Every single time I look at him, I start laughing and then also say, don't look at me like that. And how he's looking at me, it's with a combination of goofing off and trying to get my attention and judging me a little and just all that. He's a funny guy.
Oh, that's funny. So tell us, where can people buy your book?
Cat is available wherever books are sold. That includes Bloomsbury, the publisher, bookshop.org, Amazon, or best of all, place an order at your local indie bookstore.
Okay. Again, thank you so much for coming on Catitude.
Thank you, Michelle. This was so fun.
I hope everyone enjoyed the show. This is a really good book. It's called Cat by Rebecca Van Laer. And I just thought it was a wonderful book. I want to thank Rebecca for coming on Catitude. Thank you, my loyal listeners of Catitude. I appreciate you so much. Thanks to my cat crew, Dennis, Charlotte, and Molly, all different personalities. And, you know, they've taught me a lot, not just about cats, but about life. So if you're listening and just thinking maybe I should get a cat, you know what? Get two. They should be not sold. They should be adopted in pairs, because two are better than one. And of course, thank you to my amazing producer, Mark Winter, for all you do. Thank you so much, Mark. And hey, lose the attitude. Have catitude.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.